My name is Jean, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Jean.
And I'm also a prescription drug addict and a non-prescription drug addict. I am a wife to Mark. We have 4 children, and we have 4 in heaven also. So, mother of 8. I am a sponsee, a sponsor. I'm a Catholic Christian and a child of God. My condition upon arriving to AA on April 14th of 2012 was that I was dying. I had been to the Meritor Psych Ward twice. I had been taken to the Suicide Detox Center in Winnebago. I had been put in jail. I had a restraining order against restraint against my family. I was separated from my husband. I had lost my job, home, money. Pretty much came in here with nothing and was completely spiritually sick, emotionally, mentally, physically sick. I also lost a kidney. So I was. This was my last hope, was coming here, and that was on April 14th of 2012. When I got here, I was desperate because I had a family that was waiting for me. I had small children. And so I worked really closely with a sponsor who took me through the steps, and I completed all 12 steps in 3 months. I did it hard, fast, and tight. I also worked with a priest who helped me closely, too. I'd like to share my experience, strength, and hope with my recovery. Rather than focus, though, on all the negative aspects of this insidious disease, I'd like to focus on the virtues that have increased as a result of working the 12 steps at Alcoholics Anonymous. At the beginning of every meeting, we read from Chapter 5 of the Big Book on page 60. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. And I was pondering, what is spiritual progress anyways? And to me, it's growing in virtue. It's identifying the defects in step 4 and moving away from those and striving to live a virtuous life, which are the antidotes to all the defects. You know, I believe we're all called to be saints, sanctus, to be holy. The saints were people just like you and me. They were sinners who kept on trying. Doesn't that describe all of us? You know, they led heroic lives of virtue. In the doctor's opinion, Dr. Silfer states that something more than a human power is needed to produce an essential psychic change in overcoming alcoholism. And in the foreword to the second edition of the Big Book, Bill Wilson was convinced of the need for moral inventory, confession of personality defects, restitution to those harmed, helpfulness to others, and the necessity of belief in independence upon God. And tonight in my talk, I'll be using the term God because the founder of AA, Bill Wilson, built this program around God as you understand him. And there's a story about as you understand him. My husband and I were at a marriage retreat, and the person leading it was a priest who was also an alcoholic. And we were kind of debating this as you understand him thing, and he said, well, that's your husband, Mark, and you have a different understanding of him than I do. We just met. I don't know him. You've been married to him for 8 years. You have a different relationship, a different understanding. And so that was really kind of made sense. In terms of as you understand him. And this whole program of AA, I believe, is a gift from God. It's the gift of the spiritual life that was given to Bill Wilson in the 30s, and it's been practiced by the saints for millions of years. Or not millions, I should say hundreds. And so I want to thank all of you for being here and listening to this talk tonight. So the virtues that have increased as a result of working the 12 steps are based on a series of 12 meditations that I meditate on every single day, meditations that were given to St. Dominic. And I'd be happy to share those with anybody after the meeting if you're interested. So I'm striving by an act of my will to grow along spiritual lines or to grow in virtue. And the good news is that there's a solution. I can recover. I don't have to stay sick. And I can get out from the ism of the alcoholism, and I don't have to behave in the same way that I used to when I was taking drugs or drinking. I am striving to live virtue. So humility, which is the foundation and safeguard of all the virtues, it's the antidote to pride. The virtue of humility is defined as a quality by which a person, considering his own defects, has a lowly opinion of himself and willingly submits himself to God and to others for God's sake. In other words, when I was with a son, I say, when I was really sick, this was my world. And these are all the people that were in my world, my husband, my mother, my children, everyone. And the more that I tried to manage it, the more unmanageable my life got. And it made me sicker. And so, Chuck T. and Inter Glasses also uses the same diagram. He puts the line here, ego. That ego is what separates me and me things I'm different. I think ego has to be kept in check, but it's not a bad thing if you channel it into doing great things for God. So once I took myself and put myself inside the circle and let God start running the show, step 1, 2, and 3 is when I became able to get to get well. So it's humbly relying upon God as I understand Him. On page 13 of the big book, Bill Wilson said, "I admitted for the first time that I was nothing." And I love that because, you know, down here we don't seem like much, but I think from God looking down at us that we're everything. We're everything. He loves us. So before I got to AA, I had little dependence upon God. I had little humility around arriving here. I knew a lot about God, but I didn't know God. I didn't have a relationship, and that was only found through prayer and meditation. And suddenly I found myself in a life or death situation, and I needed to humbly ask for help. Reflecting on the two times in 43 years that I had demonstrated some humility, the first was when my father drowned in his swimming pool from this disease in 2003. And I found him. And, he had been in there a few days, and it was not a nice situation. And I remember I was taken to the hospital, and that was the kickoff of my faith journey, because I just left the world and went straight to the church. But I remember screaming and stomping my feet, why, because I'm an only child. And I didn't really necessarily think I was directing that to anything or anyone in particular. I was just screaming at the sky. And the other time that I thought I demonstrated somewhat of a little of humility is my husband and I miscarried 3 children in a row in 2008, 9, and 10. And I remember being so sick in my alcoholism and addiction at that time that I remember in my mind thinking, I wouldn't mind if I lost this baby because I'm so sick. And the next day I miscarried. So it was a grace from God, I believe, that knowing what was ahead of me, that I was not going to take care of it. So I could not get well until I had to set everything aside. My husband's in the program. I had to set everything aside that I thought I knew about everything. And my sponsor gave me a prayer called the Set Aside Prayer. And I have 20 copies here if anybody wants to answer. It's, "Dear God, please set aside anything I think I know about myself, about my disease, about the big book, the 12 steps, the program, the fellowship, the people in the fellowship, and all the spiritual terms, especially you, God, so that I may have an open mind and a new experience with all these things. Please help me see the truth. Amen." And I love that because it takes the pressure off. I don't have to know. I can just humbly say, I'm going to be open for this situation to unfold exactly how it is. And so examples of humility would be humbly relying upon a sponsor, upon the group, upon doctors, clergy, God, And I remember thinking, I am fighting a war here. Yeah.
How do you get a sponsor?
Yeah. If you are in a meeting and somebody you feel you connect with, you know, speaks to you, you can just approach them after the meeting and ask them if they would be willing to be your sponsor. And I remember thinking, I'm in a war here. Who's in my camp and what's their purpose to help me go down the right direction? Because I was dying by the time I got in here. I did do 110 meetings in 90 days while I completely detoxed off everything, off all pills and alcohol. So St. Thomas of Valence says, humility is the mother of many virtues because from it obedience, fear, reverence, patience, modesty, meekness, and peace are born. He who is humble easily obeys everyone, fears to offend anyone, is at peace with everyone, and is kind with all. And I recently read a book by St. Teresa of Avila called Interior Castle. And I have a book list of all the spiritual books that I've read in the past 2.5 years, and I have 20 copies of it. So if anybody is interested, this is all knowledge that I did not have before arriving here, so I'm just passing it on. She says that, Interior Castle, that the soul is like a castle and God is in the center, and that you have to progress through 7 stages to get to the center of God. But she says you can't even enter the castle unless you have humility and self-knowledge. And so that's the key to get in it, to the spiritual life, is to have humility, which I just told you I had none, basically, and the self-knowledge, which is what all of you taught me, because when I got here, I didn't know these truths about myself at all. I mean, I knew I drank, but I didn't know what we all had in common. And so, after getting that self-knowledge, then I can begin to root my life in the truth, not the subjective truth of my reality, but the truth of a reality of the existence of God. That's steps 1, 2, and 3. I say a prayer every day. God, please keep me humble today. Keep me little. Keep me hidden. Keep me grateful. Help me be dependent upon you as if I were a little child. Just so long as I do not take a drink in this next hour, then I know I am doing your will. Please bless my efforts. So humility. The second virtue that's increased is love of neighbor or charity or service to others. You've heard you shall love your neighbor as yourself. This charity has increased definitely as a result of working this program. On the first day I was here, I imagined flames over everybody's head. And my compassion grew for everyone because I realized that I was just like everyone else. And my heart just grew so big because you could understand what it feels like to literally walk through the gates of hell. My empathy also grew for all of you because I could commiserate with each of you, regardless of your age, sex, religion, sexual status, position in life. And my love also grew for all of you. Of what started out as going to any length for myself started to wanting to go to any length for all of you. So, I love, there's a story about St. Father Damien. He was a priest who went to, he moved to the island of Molokai, Hawaii, and served the lepers there. And he ended up contracting leprosy and dying, but he said, I'm just a leper among lepers. And that's exactly what I felt. I'm just one among many trying to help the next person. And even St. Francis, the beloved saint of AA, I mean, he had a conversion experience upon meeting a leper. You know, he got down from his horse and kissed the hand of a leper, and he became, you know, one of the greatest saints of our time. And even Pope Francis today is trying to promote love of all, love of neighbor. But I have to have boundaries. That's Al-Anon, because I, you know, as a vocation of my as being a mother and wife, I have to serve God by serving my family first, and then I can offer my hand to anybody else who's in need. To end with that, Bill Wilson says, to the world you may be one person, but to one person you may be the world. And we know that we have received without payment and to give without payment. So, The next virtue that's increased is poverty. And it doesn't sound like a virtue, but poverty, you know, there's two kinds. Poverty, when you come in here, there's a sense where I've lost everything. I have no money, home, car, many of us. But there's another kind of poverty, which is spiritual poverty. And you've heard that, blessed are the poor in spirit. It's good to have an increase in poverty, in spiritual poverty. St. Ignatius says this about spiritual poverty. All of us are called to poverty of spirit, which describes the stance of utter dependence before God, not in any demeaning or servile sense, but in the sense that God is God and we are creatures created to praise, love, and serve God. Before all else, we depend on God for our happiness and fulfillment. While we are grateful for our talents, abilities, wealth, and achievements, we are free to offer them to the service of God and to others and to let go of them when they get in the way of that self-giving. And I was reading an article online recently where Father Ed Dowling, who was a Jesuit priest of the Society of Jesus, was working really close with Bill Wilson as his confessor. I think, I'm not positive about that, but he was working close with him in the program in the early days, and he said, I'm almost positive you formed this whole AA program on the spiritual exercises of St. Ignatius. And he's like, well, no, I just sat down at my kitchen table and wrote it out in 20 minutes. So I thought that was kind of funny because of the divine hand that was placed in to give us this gift of the spiritual life. And the spiritual exercises of St. Ignatius are on my book list. It is a series of meditations that guide you in basically step 11, like how to find out what God's will for you is and then do it as a program of action. So, you know, I pray to have this virtue increase. The more that I become dependent on God, the more I know that I don't know anything. I know a little, but I don't know a lot. And that I was using alcohol and pills to fulfill my happiness and fulfillment. I wasn't using God, so it's taking out drugs and alcohol and replacing it with God. I would also like to talk about prayer in this section because for me, prayer is talking to God, and meditation is listening to God. And it's a gift and a practice. And in the morning, when I do my morning offering, in the third step prayer, God, I offer myself to thee. And what am I offering? I'm offering everything that I'm thinking, everything that I'm doing, and everything that I'm saying. And so, you know, if I'm finding myself with a thought that's not so pleasing, I'm responsible for my thoughts. And so I need to, like, replace them with thoughts that are good. And then after my morning offering, I go through a litany of thank yous. Thank you for my faith. Thank you for my life. Thank you for my family. Thank you for this hot shower I just had, because I know there are people across the street that don't have a hot shower. Thank you for the food. And then I say, God, I have no idea what person, place, situation, or thing you're going to put in front of me today, but I know that it's growing some virtue in me. God is constantly perfecting us. After I kind of got the hang of the 12 steps working with my sponsors, what happened was I kind of had a little spiritual pride going on, like, yeah, I know what's going on. And so I need to acknowledge this as pride and ego. And do the litmus test, that whenever I think I know about God and the way that God works, that or I've got this program figured out, I need to, like, get on my knees and say, I don't know. I do not know. So I am not God. And lastly, I love this quote from Mother Teresa, Blessed Mother Teresa. She says, you say a prayer in your religion, and I will say a prayer as I know it. And together we will say this prayer, and it will be something beautiful for God. So, Lord, please keep me poor in spirit. Okay, the next virtue that's increased as a result of working the 12 steps of AA is the virtue of obedience. That word is not a good word. And I know what you know where I'm going with this. Obey your sponsor, right? obedience is the compliance with an order, request, or law, or submission to another's authority. On page 174 of the 12 and 12, it states, so we have AA dual-based spiritual principles. First, because we must, and ultimately because we love the kind of life such obedience brings. On page 130 of the 12 and 12, his life actually depends on obedience to spiritual principles. And here's what Blessed Mother Teresa says about obedience. Don't give in to discouragement. If you are discouraged, it is a sign of pride, because it shows that you trust in your own powers. Never bother about people's opinions. Be obedient to truth, for with humble obedience, you will never be disturbed. And St. Giles maintains that we gain more merit in the spiritual life by obeying man for the love of God than by obeying God himself. So, obeying my sponsor, obeying the group, choosing to take their recommendations, obey going to meetings. I did 110 meetings in 90 days. Obey the law. Obey doctors, superiors, my husband, and God and his commandments. I don't just get to do whatever I want anymore. And alcohol equals disobedience. So in early sobriety, what I did is I set up a routine for myself. My sponsor recommended that I have a 24-hour day plan, and that's what I did. I just planned out each hour. And a lot of early sobriety was sleeping just to get through that, to push through that pain and agony and suffering. And I definitely progressed in this virtue. I try to set up small tasks for myself in each day and accomplish them. Like, not think about, no thinking, doing, action, and doing it, and then becoming a master over myself and conquering myself. My sponsor said, I want you to go to the Big Book Studies at the Wilmar Center on Tuesdays and Thursdays at 10 o'clock. And I was living with my mother in Verona, and I balked. She said, well, what else are you doing? And I said, well, you have a point. So getting up at a certain time, making my bed every day, exercising, taking my medicine, these are all increasing the virtue of obedience. Not missing doctor appointments. In step three, we make a decision to turn our will and our life over to God, obedience to God's will. Treating alcohol like you're touching a hot stove, running the other direction. Don't take a drink. Today, this hour, it is not the will of God for the alcoholic to drink or the addict to use. These are attachments that become more important than God. And even in many religious orders, the order is only successful by the obedience of its members. Same principle here. If none of us are obedient, no AA. So, God, please increase the virtue of obedience in me. The fifth virtue that's increased is joy. Joy is defined as a feeling of great pleasure and happiness. And this is increased for a few reasons. Within three months, I was able to get well. I can live out the rest of my life as the person that God intended me to be. And there was a real joy found in finally making conscious contact with God after 43 years. Whenever I was using, joy was always fleeting. It was just there for a moment, and then it just left. It was never long-lasting. So after establishing a relationship with my Creator, my joy is constant and lasting, regardless of what person, place, or situation is presented to me in any given day. I don't root my joy in people, places, or things. I root them in God. People are fallible. This type of joy is a gift that the world cannot take and the world cannot take away. My joy increases at the beginning of every meeting when we ask if anyone has had a drink since their last meeting, and it's quiet. My joy increases every time someone receives an anniversary coin. And my joy increases every time we have a gratitude meeting. If I want to feel more joyful, then I need to be more grateful. And when I'm more grateful, I'm more joyful. The next virtue that has increased is sorrow for sin. And sin, I know that's an icky word, but sin is defined as a deliberate violation of God's law. On page 13 of the big book, Bill Wilson states, "I ruthlessly faced my sins and became willing to have my newfound friend take them away root and branch, and I have not had a drink since." This is accomplished in steps 4, 5, 6, and 7 of moral inventory and confession of personality defects. I'm a sinner, you're a sinner. By the time we get through the doors of AA, we have definitely done things that are in opposition to God. I spent a long, long time reflecting on the harms that I had done to God and my fellows and felt true contrition or remorse for a life full of bad decisions while drinking and taking pills. My sponsor helped me identify my defects and helped me identify what was my part. I also mentioned that I was working closely with a priest, Father William in Verona, and I'd be happy to give anybody his number if they're interested. He's a very loving man, and which brings me to page 74 of the big book. Those of us belonging to a religious denomination which requires confession must and, of course, will want to go to the properly appointed authority whose duty it is to receive it. Though we have no religious connection, we may still do well to talk with someone ordained by an established religion. So I brought my, I did the big book way, the inventory of the big book way, and the back to basics way. But I brought this into the confession, and just, you know, I did it with a sponsor, an old timer, and a priest. So I have a pretty good perspective. And what he said in terms of feeling remorse and shame and guilt was to cast that out into the sea of God's infinite mercy and put up a no fishing sign. And I love that because I like to fish. And so I don't have to anymore. My transgressions have been blotted out. So I learned about God's mercy there. In steps 8 and 9, after I've been reconciled with God, I now try to do the same thing with my fellows. And it's here that I would like to read an amends that I made to my mother in the summer of 2012. I also made 20 copies of that. If anybody wants to just switch the names out, or no, I'm just kidding. But I'll read it to you, and you can use it as a format if you'd like. It says, "Mom, I have harmed you and our entire family through my behaviors and actions and addiction. I just simply will not be able to get over my addiction until I do my utmost to straighten out the past. Over the years, during the course of my addictions to alcohol and pills, and perhaps even during my sobriety, I was resentful, selfish, self-centered, harbored false pride, dishonest, lazy, and inconsiderate. For example, I've always been resentful towards you for many years for things that were a result of life circumstance. I failed to get help for myself to deal with these resentments, and I let them pile up. I alienated you from my emotional life, and not only that, from my life in general for many years. I did not call you or even talk to you for a long, long time on a regular basis. But then, when I would call or see you, it would be in a selfish nature, where I would be trying to get something I wanted or not losing something I had. For example, barely talking to you when you lived in Minnesota, but then when I wanted money for a house, I was quick to call you. Also, by removing you from my life, I was not treating you like my mother, which is your God-given right. Another example would be not caring about your life and what you happen to be going through, but only with myself. Is my mother going to walk the dog? Is she going to watch my kids? Help me with my housework. And then when you wouldn't comply to all my needs, I would become angry and resentful again. I have also harbored false pride towards you. In other words, I had always thought I was better than you. I thought I had better morals, had better intelligence, was smarter, wiser, nicer, better clothes, better style, and the list goes on. The truth of the matter is that I have been so judgmental about your humanness and the mistakes I believe that you have made. I have made the exact same mistake. Here I have been holding you to a higher standard than myself, which was very arrogant and definitely a sense of false pride. I have been very lazy and have not done chores and deeds from my very earliest memory. I was not obedient or respectful towards you as a parent. I was certainly not honoring you or your wishes. I've also been very dishonest for a very long time about how sick I actually was. I concealed from you how much I was drinking from age 15 on up and about how many pills I was taking from age 32 on up. You never really knew how sick I was, which is the common denominator in all of my life's faults and failings. Being suspended from high school, moving countless times, failed relationships, friendships, marriages, alienating family members, rude behavior, lost jobs, onset of other illnesses and poor health, migraines, smoking, anxiety, panic, agoraphobia, personality disorder, depression, separation from your grandkids up until present. I have been inconsiderate towards you in your own home also. I have expected you to set the thermostat at what I think it should be, or allow me to watch TV and not giving you enough privacy, which I'm still working on, or throwing dog poop on your driveway, or threatening you, or acting scary not too long ago, or criticizing your own drinking in your own home, not allowing you peace in your own home. Lastly, you have taken me into your home twice in the last 10 years. In 2004, after Dad's death, and in 2012, after my husband had to take drastic action in order to save my life. Given all of this, you still took me in and are still helping me despite how poorly I have treated you all of these years, and I'm so very thankful. Mom, I truly and deeply regret any and all harm or pain that I have caused you. I was wrong. In an effort that this will never occur again between us or anyone else, I am seeking outpatient rehabilitation through Gateway, in which I see a therapist and a psychiatrist specializing in addictology, which is Dr. Webb, by the way. In addition, I am an Alcoholics Anonymous, a 12-step program, and work very closely with a sponsor. I have been attending one or more AA meetings every day since April 14, 2012, and have detoxed off all potentially harmful and addictive medications such as antihistamines, benzodiazepines, and hydrocodone pain medications, Benadryl, clonazepam, Valium, morphine, Norco. A friend helps monitor my other prescription medications and alcohol medications daily, and I am set to start DBT in August, which is Dialectical Behavioral Therapy, an 8-month program which teaches stress reduction management, mindfulness meditation, behavioral therapy, and other life coping skills without the use of substances. I've also been seeking counsel from my priest and have 2 spiritual advisors that are available to me. Is there anything I have missed, any other harms I have caused you, or any other way I can further rectify things between us? Love, your daughter, Jean. And I wrote my amends. I typed it up. I forwarded it to my sponsor, email. She said, go for it. I printed it out, and I sat down in front of my mother very seriously and read this to her, and then I gave her a copy. And her response was, I never knew what was wrong with you. And I said, neither did I. So it's here where I'd like to also mention forgiveness. You've heard, forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. God has forgiven me countless times. And so I am called to do likewise to every single other person that I come in contact with on a 24-hour basis. Page 58 of the 12 and 12. Our moral inventory had persuaded us that all-around forgiveness was desirable, but it was only when we resolutely tackled step 5 that we inwardly knew we'd be able to receive forgiveness and to give it to. St. Francis' prayer, that where there is wrong, I may be, bring the spirit of forgiveness. I had huge things I needed to be forgiven of, huge things I needed to forgive also, and my sponsor just told me to forgive it all, one big clump, and I did. I casted it out, put up a no fishing sign. So, God can do the rest. Okay, purity, next virtue that's increased. You know, going through the process of AA is a very purifying experience just because I'm removing all the toxic substances out of my system. But there's also a purity of intention. You know, whenever I was using alcohol or drugs, my intention was never pure. It was always, if I traced it back, came to root in self, selfishness, self-centeredness. And always had some form of manipulation or ulterior motive attached to it. And so St. Peter Julian Aimard says this about purity. We must be pure. I do not speak merely of the purity of the senses. We must observe great purity in our will, in our intentions, and in our actions. And this program also talks about the moral standards of absolute honesty, purity, unselfishness, and love, the four absolutes that were borrowed from the Oxford group, which was the evangelical Christian group, which AA stems from, which they borrowed from the Sermon on the Mount. So these are guidelines to help me determine whether a course of action was directed by God or not. So before I make a decision, is my intention honest, pure, unloving, and honest, pure, unselfish, and loving? Also, Father Michael Gately, in his book 33 Days to Morning Glory, states that a person practices purity of intention when he directs his thoughts, words, actions, not to himself or another creature, but to a divine purpose or mission, and ultimately to God. And so this allows me to check when I'm going to make a decision, is what I'm doing pure? What is the reason behind it? And if I can check that it is going to have a divine purpose or is going to benefit someone, that's always helpful. Courage. Courage is the next virtue that has increased. This program is stocked full of courage opportunities. When I was sick, I wasn't even able to drive a car and or go out of my house. I was isolated on a tiny little farmhouse in New Glarus with a whole bunch of kids, and I couldn't even leave my house. I was so scared. So courage is defined as the ability to do something that frightens one or strength in the face of pain or grief. Page 68 of the Big Book. We never apologize for depending on our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality the way of weakness. Paradoxically, it's the way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. Instead, we let Him demonstrate through us what He can do. We ask Him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what He would have us be. At once, we commence to outgrow fear. In the Serenity Prayer, the courage to change the things I can. My experience with courage is because my natural tendency is to want to isolate. Coming to a meeting, that's an act of courage. Talking at a meeting, standing up and talking, courage. Honestly reflecting upon my defects, confessing my defects to a sponsor or clergy, taking responsibility for my life after letting it go by the wayside for so long. Making a firm purpose to amend my life. And, you know, for me, my alcoholism gave me problems with the law. So the courage to face my consequences in front of a judge and face my husband after ruining our family. Through the step work, outgrowing fear of people and situations and rooting my life in God. Something I'd like to mention about courage here is that my sponsor and I, we kind of sponsor each other right now. And I know that she was struggling with some shame and guilt, and I recommended her to go talk with Father William, and she did. She's not Catholic. I thought that was a heroic example of her courage to go in, and her response was, "I will go anywhere to seek God." And I love that. Okay, patience. The capacity to accept or tolerate delay, trouble, or suffering without getting angry or upset. My husband and I were on vacation last week, and God gave me a parable on patience. We have three children. We told them they can have dessert at lunch or dinner. Two of them opted to have sweet pizza at Pizza Hut, and the other one decided to wait patiently. So she went the whole rest of the day. And then we found a Golden Corral, which is buffet. And she was enjoying her patience. She had whipped cream and pudding. And so I thought, you know what? That's exactly true. The instant gratification is not always the best choice. Like, in a day's time, you know, I can't see 3 months from now what my recovery is going to look like today. But if I'm just patient and can have the courage to just keep going one day at a time, then I can enjoy those Golden Corral desserts. So, anyways, St. Francis de Sales says, have patience with all things, but chiefly have patience with yourself. Don't lose courage in considering your own imperfections, but instantly set about remedying them every day, being a task, begin the task anew. You know, patience, I have 24 hours in a day, just like everyone here. I can't make an hour go faster. I can't make a day go faster. I wanted to have 6 months of recovery in 2 months. And it's perspective. I mean, the first month of my daughter's life went fast. The first month of recovery was like being in hell. So it's just how I'm orientating myself in relationship to it. So patience. Perseverance is the next virtue, defined as steadfast in doing something despite difficulty or delay in achieving success. I recommend setting a recovery goal. I don't recommend that 5, 10, 15-year plan of recovery. I mean, I was forced here, and I really didn't have a choice whether or not to get well. I had to get well fast because I had little suffering children that wanted their mommy. So, you know, the third step prayer, take away my difficulties so that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help. Victory, you know, victory, the act of defeating an enemy or an opponent in battle. That's exactly what I'm learning here, how to defeat the enemy, because the enemy tried to take me down and take me down fast. So to persevere and to keep going, you know, to stay focused. To force myself through those 12 steps, not to rest on my laurels, so I can experience that psychic change that Dr. Silkworth talks about. I had to really tap into this vigilante type spirit in order to overcome myself. Lastly, the last three virtues are faith, hope, and love that have increased as a result of this program. Faith, complete trust or confidence in someone or something. St. Paul says that faith is the substance of things to be hoped for and the evidence of things that appear not. So my faith tells me that if I walk through these doors of AA and I sit and I listen to everybody around the table, I can live and I can get well too. I don't have to be sick. And the 12 and 12 says this about faith. We receive the gift of faith, a faith which works. And even those who had faith already often became conscious of God as they never were before. Faith, to be sure, is necessary, but faith alone can avail nothing. He may be an example of truth that faith alone is insufficient. I had faith. I knew a lot about God. I had little humility. My addiction was blocking my humility. My faith grew when my humility opened up. But God was not going to come down to my farmhouse in New Guerra, take the towels off my windows, open up the curtains, and save me. I had to do the footwork. So faith without works is dead. Faith without footwork is dead. I had to work damn hard in order to be recovered. I had to do the footwork. And then, you know, the courage to change I can. After I've done everything that I possibly can in my own power, then I have to go to prayer and trust. Hope. Hope is a longing. It's also a feeling of expectation or a desire for a certain thing to happen. The newly sainted Pope John the 23rd says, consult your fears, but your hopes, and your consult not your fears, but your hopes and your dreams. Think about your frustrations. Think not about your frustrations, but about your unfilled potential. Concern yourself not with what you tried and failed in, but with what is still possible for you to do. And I love that, because God can make everything new starting right now. Not 5 minutes ago, starting right now. In the big book, Forward to the Third Edition, says each day somewhere in the world, recovery begins when one alcoholic talks with another alcoholic, sharing experience, strength, and hope. Those who work the steps and are victorious give hope to new people who are coming in. And then Bill Wilson also says, understanding myself now, I fared forth in high hope. And I believe that hope is given to us by God, and I also don't believe that God gives a false hope. So this is a program of hope. This is a program that I get to live. Love is the last virtue, greatest of all the virtues, defined as an intense feeling or deep affection. And it's also a choice. I'm choosing to love the people in my life today for the love of God. St. Faustina states that pure love knows that only one thing is needed to please God, to do even the smallest things out of great love, always love. My love is increased in love of neighbor, like I said, but it's also my love of God is increased with this program because of my sheer dependency upon Him. You know, when I was using, it was easy to be loving to people, you know. I had to retrain myself to be loving towards all in all circumstances, stone cold sober. And lastly, Father William taught me so much about the fact that God is love, and that God is a merciful Savior rather than a just judge. And I learned a devotion to the divine mercy of God, and if anybody's interested, I would be happy to share it after the meeting. Not the fire and brimstone that I hear so much about in meetings. God is merciful and loving, and He loves us. So, lastly, I'll just say that step 11 of the 12 and 12 on page 105 says, the moment we catch even a glimpse of God's will, the moment we begin to see truth, justice, and love as the real and eternal things in life, we are no longer deeply disturbed by all the seeming evidence to the contrary that surrounds us in purely human affairs. Thank you.
Yeah.